This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Over more than 30 years, Ed Harris has played a lot of villains and good guys. You may remember the indomitable team leader in Apollo 13 or the unhinged artist in Pollock. In his latest picture, The Way Back, he inhabits a character called Mr. Smith, an American engineer swept up by Joseph Stalin's secret police near the start of the Second World War and sent to a work camp in remote Siberia, one of the dreaded gulags. In the camp's mine, a fellow prisoner tells Mr. Smith that another man knows a way to get out.
He has a plan.
Who has a plan?
His name is Khabarov.
The actor.
You know him.
He has no intention of escaping. He's a liar. He's been here for years. Seeks out new arrivals. Me, when I first came here, he just likes to talk about escape. I've known others like him.
Why should I believe you?
Nothing is for nothing in the camps for you. He gets your energy, your spirit. You feed his dream of escape.
Eventually, a small group does make it out of the camp with one grim option, a long, desperate walk south through frozen forests, trackless deserts, and finally over the Himalaya Mountains to India, 4,000 miles in all. Ed Harris grew up in New Jersey. Where did he find a character so far outside his own experience? We want to hear from actors today. How do you find that character whose experiences or emotions are so different from your own? Give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, baby Doc's return to Haiti and apparently a return to custody. But first, Ed Harris joins us from our bureau in New York. His new picture, The Way Back, opens on Friday. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you, Neil.
And I read you were raised in Tenafly, a town I know well because I grew up right next door in Englewood, New Jersey. Bergen County's a long way from the Soviet gulag. How did you prepare for the role of Mr. Smith?
Well, I got this script, you know, from Peter Weir, who was such a wonderful director, several months before we began filming and started doing my research, of course. I was totally unaware of the thousands of Americans that had gone to Russia to work during the Great Depression, you know, and there's actually a great book published in 2008 called The Forsaken that I spent a lot of time with about this very subject.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I did a lot of physical work. I started dropping some weight and just started getting ready for the adventure.
Dropping some weight? You look pretty skeletal by the time this movie's over.
Well, you know, I figured, first of all, these guys are in this gulag. They're surviving on maybe a piece of bread and some watery soup every day. Then they're working 12 hours a day at least. There's not a lot of nutrition going on there. And then, of course, during the course of this walk, which is months and months and months, they're barely surviving. So I figured it probably makes sense to drop a few pounds.
Well, gives you something to do, too.
Yeah.
As you prepare for the part, though, the emotions of somebody who finds himself in this situation, where did you go to find that?
Well, I think the one thing I tried to do was really find a place within myself that was a very private, very centered, very calm place, which I would imagine anyone in that situation, whether it be a concentration camp or gulag, where you're really, your humanity is thrust back into yourself. In other words, you can't depend on anyone other than yourself to survive. And it's really finding a place where you want to live and where day by day, minute by minute, step by step, you survive.
That self-contained element of Mr. Smith's character, there's a scene early in the picture when they say he does something and they say, "What's your name?" And you say, "Smith." And I say, "Well, what's your first name?" And there's a pause and you say, "Mr."
Yes. Well, there you go. I think at that point his humanity has been totally stripped from him, and it's, you don't need to know anything about me other than, yeah, I'm here, Mr. Smith. That's me. That's who I am.
Yet a man also willing to take terrible chances for his fellow prisoners.
Well, he knows if he stays in this camp, particularly in the mines, he's not going to survive. And when he meets the Jim Sturgis character who has an idea of escaping, he says, you know, I'll go with you. And because he knows he also can't do it by himself. And yeah, the group of them kind of band together. They have to, and they go on this perilous journey, and some of them make it and some of them don't. And his heart, you know, the young woman joins them in the guise of Saoirse Ronan. And she, what little is left of his humanity, she really kind of touches, and he begins to experience actually caring again.
And that is an interesting process. But these prisoners who escape tell each other nothing about each other's lives, about their own lives, until indeed this girl shows up and tells them, each of the prisoners is willing to tell her something, but not the other prisoners.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the construct of the script that Peter put together. And it kind of makes sense to me in the sense that, you know, it's really not about the past, the future, hopes or dreams. It's really about putting one foot in front of the other, and no emotion needs to get in the way of that. No personal investment in each other. It's really survival. It's really that. But she kind of reminds everybody that, yeah, you're human, and she's a young lady, and she's kind of got a certain energy, and everyone opens up to her. Yeah.
And I'm not going to give away the whole movie, but it is based on a book from 1956 called The Long Walk, The True Story of a Trek to Freedom, that purported to be the story of the author's escape from the Gulag, very popular and I think sold 500,000 copies, eventually translated into over 30 languages, recently, though, revealed as fiction.
Well, Peter, you know, did some research, obviously, and it wasn't too long before we started filming that there was some documentation that came forth that kind of proved that Slawomir could not have done this walk at the time he said he did. He was a member of the Polish cavalry, and he was elsewhere at that time. However, there was an Indian government person of some sort, I'm not sure, who has testified, or is documented, that there were three men who came over the Himalayas and had said that they had come from northern Siberia and had done this walk. So Peter felt that was verification enough in terms of telling the story. And whether or not it was true, it's a wonderful story of survival and humanity and forgiveness.
As you were filming, I gathered in at least part of the preparation for this, you were sent out to do some camping.
Well, we're not really. I mean, we weren't really. We never spent overnight anywhere. I don't know where you heard that.
But okay,
we didn't do any camping. We milked some goats and peeled some bark, and you know, did some physical work, and had done a bunch of that stuff before I got there. And there was also a wonderful guy named Cyril, who was a Frenchman, who had actually done this walk, not consecutively, but he had actually traversed all of this terrain and talked to us about the effects of dehydration and malnutrition and some of the hallucinations he had had when he suffered from hypothermia and that kind of thing. So he was really helpful as well.
We're talking with Ed Harris. His most recent film is The Way Back, and we're asking how actors find characters who are so far out of their experience, and our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Jeff's on the line calling from Kansas City.
Hello.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Ed, I got to tell you, man, what little it means to have a 23-year-old actor out of Missouri telling you this, I got to say it, I really love your work, man.
Thank you, Jeff.
Now, I wanted to go ahead and comment a bit about this idea of playing characters so far away from yourself. One thing that I've always found to be important is that when you break any character down, and I mean most of the time anyway, it's a human being. And as people across the span of history, we really haven't changed that much. It's the reason why Shakespeare and the Greek tragedies are still resound so well today, is because people will always want food, shelter, happiness, success, and love. Your experience and what has made you into a different person from, say, my next-door neighbor and the guy down the street, maybe, is the experience that's made me the man I am. That's going to decide how I go about getting what I want. But when you break it right down, people are people. Mm-hmm. And that's where I find a great connection with a character that I maybe have nothing else in common with. We both definitely want love. And that's always a place to begin.
Very astute, Jeff.
Jeff, thank you.
Can you give us an example, Jeff?
Sure. And this isn't exactly about love, but that's one thing that's great about, at least that I love about acting, is that there's no one way to do it. Every character, every role is a little bit different. I recently played Tobias in a production of Sweeney Todd. And I have no actual experience being beaten daily and malnourished and forced to work as a slave in, you know, Victorian London's child labor. I don't know anything about that personally.
You don't?
But, no. Labor laws just wouldn't let it happen. I was 10 years old, couldn't get a job in a sweatshop to save my life. It was very sad. But one thing that I began to find with Tobias was a physical way in. You know, you can experiment with all sorts of different things, finding a walk that makes sense for this character. Maybe with Tobias specifically, I found myself after experimenting with a few different things that his main, you know, need in life is to eat. He doesn't know every day where his food is going to come from or how much of it he's going to get. And so I found myself leading with my gut. That was what sort of pushed me along. That's what was really pulling me. I also ended up finding a very interesting sort of pigeon-toed step-by-step process where, you know, my toes were angled inward a lot as I walked. And that was something I just really picked up from my brother's girlfriend. Honestly, I just noticed the way she moved, and it just struck me in an interesting way, and I started playing with it in rehearsals, and that became the Toby walk. That became my key into that character, if that makes sense.
Well, Jeff, I can guarantee you that Tobias ate better than a lot of the people in this picture. So,
I look forward to seeing it. It sounds fantastic.
All right, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil, and thank you, Ed.
Good luck to you, Jeff.
Our guest is Ed Harris. We'd like to hear from the actors in our audience. How do you find that character so far outside your own experience? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Actor and director Ed Harris has played scarred gangsters, Wild West marshals, even the brutish and ferocious artist Jackson Pollock.
The article is about the direction of modern art, Jackson. It's not just about you.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to him.
Well, if you...
I'm not talking to you. Shut up! Didn't review 52. The 54 show was forced and pumped. Is that right?
I saw it, yes.
Have I lost my stuff, Clem?
Ed Harris nominated for an Oscar for that part. His latest movie is called The Way Back, and we're taking your calls. Actors, when you're called upon to play a part that falls way outside your own experience, tell us how you get there. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Ed Harris, Jackson Pollock, a completely different character. How did you find him?
Well, I had been working on that Pollock's film for a good decade, just about, and you know, started painting and obviously researching that period of time and talking to people that he knew. And my initial kind of the genesis of wanting to portray Pollock was really more about him as a human being, as a person, as opposed to his art, which I obviously came to appreciate hugely. But it was really his struggles as a social being that kind of interested me.
Did you try to find his, you know, the way he spoke? There must be tape of him.
Yeah, there's some tapes, a couple of radio interviews he did that were very helpful. And there was a great, you know, the great Namath film where it shows him painting when he's outside in his house in Springs. And so you could certainly get a feeling for the way he moved around the canvas and that kind of thing. And photographs are very helpful just in terms of posture and the way someone holds themselves, that kind of thing. So all of things come into play for sure.
10 years working on a part.
Well, yeah, I mean, most of that, you know, it was off and on. I was doing other things,
sure,
but yeah. You know, I was working on that script all that time and getting to a place where, trying to really get it to a place where I thought it could make sense. I hadn't really thought of directing that picture until about a year before we began filming, when I realized I didn't want to hand it over to anybody else, so I ended up directing it myself.
A little Pollock in yourself at that moment.
Yeah.
I wonder, after it's all over, inevitably the process of making a movie, you have to make decisions and compromises and go with this instead of that. You happy with it?
With Pollock?
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's stood up over the 10 years since it was made, and people seem to appreciate it. I feel very good about Pollock. I'm very proud of it.
We got this tweet from our friend Mickey Maynard at Changing Gears. Jackson Pollock did not come off as a likable guy, at least in the movie. What was your impression after playing him?
Well, he was, especially near the end of his life, he was a monster. I mean, he was really difficult to deal with. It wasn't about a film about a nice guy. It was a film about a guy who pushed through all of his demons to create some great art, revolutionary. And other than the fact that, which is a big fact, that Edith Metzger perished in this car crash when Pollock died, other than that, you know, which you can't excuse that. I mean, he really basically murdered somebody, but... that's the one major regret, I guess, that he would have about himself. Other than that, he was fighting the way he knew how to create what he had to create.
To get a part like that, you did, well, on and off for 10 years, work on this project, eventually directed it yourself. They don't come around that often.
What's that, parts like that?
Parts like that, no.
No, that's why I wanted to do it, and that's why I had to do it myself. I don't think anybody else was going to. And likewise with Appaloosa. I mean, I read this story about these two guys, and I read the first few chapters of Robert Parker's novel, and I just fell in love with the relationship of these two men and their friendship and their kind of respect and trust in each other. And I felt that I just got tickled. I just wanted to make a film about it.
Ed Harris, if you don't recognize the voice in the unlikely event, is our guest. His new film is The Way Back. Let's get Andrew on the line. Andrew with us from Denver.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Ed, have always loved your work. And I just finished playing Louis Ironson in a production of Angels in America here. And for people who are not familiar, he is a character who leaves his gay lover when his lover contracts the AIDS virus. And I am neither gay, nor Jewish, nor a word processor in New York City in the mid-80s. And I found my way into it was, as the gentleman before me said, there's a little physical thing. I grew a mustache, like, you know, you see those pictures from kind of the leather bars in the mid-80s, and some of the butcher guys had those mustaches to assert their machismo. But I just did it over and over again and just continued to look to the text and at the same time made sure I didn't judge this guy, because I found for me as an actor, when I can fall into real trouble is when I start judging the person I am playing, because we don't judge ourselves when we make these really hard decisions in life, and you have to commit. I was rolling around on the floor with another guy very close to nude and just had to commit. You know, we're actors. If we're afraid to look like idiots up there, then chances are good we're going to look like idiots if we're afraid about it. And that's the way I've always found, is to really commit to it and to also not judge. You know, like I imagine, Ed, if I may say so, you probably didn't judge Jackson Pollock when you played him, and you did a great job with that. And of course, he was a hateful guy in many ways, but you found the truth of that man by, it looked to me, just committing and not judging. And that has been my experience in the past, and I had many people come up to me after the show and say, I can't believe you're not gay, you know, and so it was very, very satisfying. And of course, it led me to finding new ways to feel compassion for people whose actions I might otherwise judge less than compassionate themselves.
Sounds good.
Ed Harris?
I mean, I think one of the things as actors that gets in the way of a lot of actors is their own self-image and how they see themselves.
Exactly.
And not wanting to betray that in some way, as opposed to opening up and saying, hey, I'm I'm whoever I need to be.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, one of my favorite things, actually, to struggle with as an actor, because I think we all have a certain amount of vanity, you know, and I think a lot of us in certain ways have a lot. Well, I can only speak for myself, but I know a lot of times I have a lot invested in trying to look cool. And if I'm worrying about that on stage, I'm totally getting in my own way. You know, I think if we're really going to give these characters the life that they deserve, especially with somebody like Jackson Pollock or what Tony Kushner put out there for us, if we're really going to give them the credit and the time that they deserve, we have to put all of our own crap aside and just give as much truth to the role as we can.
Well, I'm certainly glad that kind of vanity just does not appear in radio whatsoever. Andrew, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Of course, of course.
Do you sometimes see other people, or maybe even yourself sometimes, posing either on stage or in the movies, Ed?
I don't find myself posing. I find myself defending on occasion.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you know, you not so much these days, but, you know, a number of years ago, whatever, you walk into some tough bar somewhere, you're not going to, you know, you kind of, you know, you puff yourself up a little bit and say, don't screw with me, mm-hmm. because if you do, you're going to be in trouble. So you just put that energy out there, and that's a bit of a posturing thing, you know. But I've been frequenting that many tough bars lately, so I'm not too concerned about it.
Well,
But it's just the whole image of how you think, how you see yourself, you know, how you present yourself to the world, and which is fine if you recognize what it is that how you do that, so that you can rid yourself of that, portraying someone who's not that, you know. You have to be kind of honest with yourself or you're going to be a liar.
After time, does it get easier? Do you not have to think about it so much?
I think over time you should start shedding some stuff that you've been carrying around for a while, hopefully, you know. I mean, it's not that you become a neutral being, but you understand where your behavior comes from or what you're trying to affect, you know. And maybe you decide you don't need to do a lot of that. You know, you can just kind of be who you are and take it moment to moment and see where it leads you.
Do you consciously think of how can I make this smaller?
Smaller.
Yeah, to not overplay it.
No, I don't think that's never really been a concern of mine. I just, you know, I'm not quite sure what the question is, but I never feel like I'm over the top, you know.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that. It was just in the way back, it would have been easy to be more melodramatic. These are very
I've got to say, from, you know, in terms of Peter Weir's approach to this and how he dealt with all of us as actors and his own vision of this piece was so non-sentimental. Anything that even started approaching that he would, you know, deny or not want. Not that there aren't hopefully some moving things in the picture, but mm-hmm. He never wanted to milk it, you know. Hmm. It was really very spare and very bare bones kind of look at things, if that makes any sense.
Oh, no, it does. It makes perfect sense after you've seen the film. Though I really thought he could have gotten a big product placement deal with ChapStick in that film.
Yeah, maybe some sunblock.
Here's an email we have from Veronica. I'm not an actor, took one class in college and got a C and gave up, but am fascinated by how actors move us in the audience with their craft and skill. My burning question is, how do you feel the emotions you portray in a scene? If so, one wonders why one might subject him or herself to painful scenes.
Well, you know, I think there's various approaches to acting. I think that you know, there's that famous thing that Olivier said to Dustin Hoffman after he'd been up all night during Marathon Man because he had to play someone who'd been forced to stay up and tortured, and said, you know, my dear boy, you know, have you ever heard of acting? But in terms of emotional things, I personally enjoy that, allowing myself to feel what the character would be feeling. I mean, it's my own emotion that I'm dealing with. It's not displaced. I'm not thinking about some other memory. I'm not pretending something's somebody else. It's creating the reality of the situation as an actor where the emotions of the character are yours, and that they're very real, and that you do feel them, whether it's sadness or anger or grief or embarrassment or whatever it might be. You know, that just to me is fun. I just enjoy working that way. Not that you can't act those things, but there's, you know, there's nothing less emotional or less touching than someone going, you know, just pretending that they're upset about something. You know, I mean, it's, I just personally see through that stuff, and I'd rather, come on, suffer a little bit, will you?
Ed Harris is our guest, nominated 4 times for the Oscar, and his new picture is called The Way Back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. Let's go next to Raymond. Raymond with us from Wadesboro, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Very good. I was a lead actor in an outdoor drama for several years. I played a drunken Irish ghost. And it was a historical drama, and what I did was I immersed myself in the history, the region, the culture, the kind of things that made people do what they do, and I got to the point where I was able to see myself as the character, just, you know, believe that I was the character there for a time. And even when I wasn't in character, I would often be daydreaming about being the character. So it just sort of it took on something of a life of its own.
Did you enjoy that process?
I really did. I'm something of an introvert anyway, so I have the ability to feel a lot of things rather intensely. But but being able to do that allowed me to explore portraying those emotions for others in really a non-threatening way. I find I use this sort of thing in my classroom all the time.
In your class, are you a teacher?
Yes, I teach mathematics.
And you use the acting in your classroom?
Oh, yeah. You'd be surprised. It's much better to make the students laugh than cry.
I suspect you're right about that. Math made me cry a lot more often than it made me laugh, though.
Oh, but if you have a teacher that can be silly and still get the point across, you know, portray different things, you know, grab your attention with you know, in different ways, then it's all worth it. Makes it much better.
If you say so, Raymond.
You should be in my classroom.
Not a chance. Thank you very much, though, for the phone call. We appreciate it. A tweet from Crow Lofter has said, Ed Harris, you've been nominated 4 times for Best Actor, I think Best Supporting Actor, but never won. Do you ever begin to select films based on that?
Certainly not. I try to find interesting characters to play and people that I want to work with, you know, and that's pretty much it. I mean, the whole Oscar deal is such a crapshoot and has a lot to do with money and marketing and that kind of thing. So can't really base my decisions on that.
You had worked with Peter Weir before on The Truman Show. How was this experience different?
Well, The Truman Show, you know, I came in kind of late, and I just really worked for about 10 days with Peter on that. But I loved working with him because he's so thorough and he's so focused and so attentive and treats everyone with respect and a wonderful, wonderful filmmaker. And I had hoped to work with him again. So when I found out that this was going to happen and that he wanted me to play Mr. Smith, I was very excited. And the difference was really that I was with him for 4 months and that we worked much more intimately together over a longer period of time. We were in a in extreme situations physically in terms of the cold and heat and that kind of thing. And we just, I don't know, it was just really about more time in a different kind of film. The Truman Show was very controlled. I was in a, you know, kind of a big, huge television studio area. And this was, we were outside and there was a lot of different details to pay attention to and a lot of different aspects of this journey that these people were taking. And was a it was a real group effort on a day-to-day level because it was not an easy shoot, but it was a wonderful group of people that really worked together and were very committed to doing this. So it was pretty exciting.
Well, Ed Harris, good luck with the film. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks a lot, Neil. It's nice being on the show.
Ed Harris' new film is The Way Back, the story of a group of men who escaped from a Soviet gulag during the Second World War and then walk to freedom 4,000 miles across forests and deserts and mountains. It opens in theaters this Friday. He joined us today from our bureau in New York.